Zena, I'll always love you.
Welcome to the Zena Anubris podcast show, aka XNU. My name is Cass and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following the podcast so far. We're now up to episode number 34. This podcast show is for all the Zena Anubris subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. Well, hello everyone and welcome back to the show. I hope everyone is doing well. We are doing well on this end. We're holding it together. As you know, we've been going through quite a few things in our life over here, and it's been an up and down, but you know, things are going well. We pray to God every day that everything will turn out fine and that my partner's dad will, you know, get better and come out of hospital, and that, you know, the end of the year will be around the corner and we'll be moving along. But I can be honest with you that we are both definitely looking forward to this year ending. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm over it. It's like, okay, done, pass, next, hello. I was just thinking on the way here, and I was just getting out of my truck, and I was thinking, okay, I got to do the, you know, get the recording done and edited, and I was like, I wonder what kind of subject I'm going to talk about this way. And I was thinking, oh, I really don't really have much to say. And then, of course, bam, as luck would have it, there's something to talk about. And you know how everybody, you get these classifications in our genre, where we get these, well, you have the butch, you have the femme, you have the lipstick lesbians, you have the dykes, and have all these quantifications of our different friends. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, what category would I fit in? And I was thinking to myself, you'd have to actually make a new category for me. I guess it would be a new word. It would be, fimbush. Because I definitely love getting dressed up and makeup and heels and a dress and the femininity of it all. And my bias partner always turns around and says that I am stunningly amazing when I do that. And, you know, like I said, she's biased. But, and in the same aspect, I love being able to also get in my jeans, put on my baseball cap backwards, and get out in my truck and give it a tune-up, or, as you guys know, get out and work with some woods and do some woodworking. You get sawdust in all the wrong places and and do things like that, and do plumbing and drop tools on my feet, and yeah, all the fun things in life. And the main reason this I was thinking about this was as I went to get out of my truck and reach for the passenger side door, you know, you lean across and you flip the switch and open up the door. I happened to slam my finger into the windshield as you go across, slam down, and to go and open the door. And it just so happened at that particular moment, at that particular time, that my nail was in the way. And so, excruciatingly painfully, I discovered I ripped my nail off my finger. And I can tell you by the words, ow, that hurt. I didn't look at my hand because, as everybody knows, you know, when you get hurt, you just don't look because you know that the minute you look, it's going to hurt even more. You know, you get that 30-second reprieve. It's like, okay, I'm not going to look because if I don't look, it won't hurt. And therefore, it really didn't happen. Bullshit, it did happen. And, yeah, so I looked down at my hand, and I have this nail hanging half off my finger, and it's starting to bleed, and I'm sitting there going, okay, obviously I'm not too much of a femme, because the first thing that comes into my mind is, okay, don't let the blood get on the car. Don't let it get on the car seat. I don't want to have to clean this. And then, okay, idiot, you're bleeding. Get out of the car. Go put something on and then come back and get the rest of the stuff. So, and I was thinking to myself, okay, they had gotten to the point where it was starting to irritate me at work because while I was typing, instead of my normal typing speed, I had started to get down to a really slower speed because my keys were getting hit, the wrong keys, you know. Go to hit the T and you hit the 5 and the 6, you know, because it's just not there. So, needless to say, I've cut all the nails off on that hand, and I'm sure my lovely wife will turn around and say, "Told you so." As they do, because the sympathy level is just there, as you can tell. Aside from that, it just in my mind just goes on a wander. I decided to go, I wonder what that means. But yeah, I guess you would call me, for those of you who really care or give a damn. Because I know most of you are sitting there going, "Oh, shut up and get on with the show." But, I guess that would be a new word for me. It's like, so, yeah, it just made me wonder, you know, I guess I'd be a unique version of that. But then again, you know, I've been told that I am different. Well, at least that's what the doctor says. I have to amuse myself. Nobody else will. Okay, getting on to the show. Let's see. I do have a movie suggestion. And this week's movie suggestion comes from Hannah. And Hannah's given me a list, so I'm just going to choose one of them. And we're going to choose Debs, D-E-B-S. And my partner and I actually rented this and watched this, and we sat back and laughed our butts off because we thought it was quirky funny, and it was kind of one of those "you've got to be joking me" kind of movies. But in the movie description in Wolf Video, it comes up as sultry crime boss Lucy Diamond, or Jordana Brewster from the movies The Fast and the Furious. And can I say a little side note here? She's gorgeous. But anyway, is back on the States, and the Debs, an elite team of paramilitary college co-eds super spies, are hot on her trail. But when their top agent, gorgeous Amy Bradshaw, a.k.a. Sarah Foster, the Big Bounce, mysteriously disappears after coming face-to-face with the attractive villainess, the Debs begin a full-scale search for Lucy's secret lair, never suspecting that Amy may not want to be rescued after all, in the smart and sexy spy spoof about love at first gun sight. So, that's the movie review. I have a link on my show notes, as usual, for the review on Wolf Video. So you can take a look at it, see the cover shot, and, you know, if you want to Google it and take a look, you know, by all means, please do. And like I said, Jordana Brewster is just... Anyway, you can't really say much besides that. It's just like, oh, God. But it's a shame. Anyway, my wife's going to kill me. So we're getting into the show. On this week's episode, we will be continuing Petal of the Rose by the late L.J. Moss from the Conqueror series. We continue on into chapter 15, but we're going to do a recap and then get on with the show. The song snippet that we're going to hear on this episode is Dido, Take My Hand. And now with the recap. After having fallen asleep while Yupan had worked on healing Solon, Xena and Gabrielle woke the next morning in their chambers. Xena was watching Yupan going through his morning exercises and suspected she knew who he was truly. She dressed and met him in the training field, sitting with him a moment and talking with him about her concerns over Gabrielle's protection. She then asked him if he would mind her practicing with him in the sparring field, which of course he said no. Gabrielle and Atreus thought that her foolish actions to do so with a frail man such as he, but she stated that he would be fine. He proved her right by beating her in the sparring routine. It was then that Yupan was revealed to be the Tiger of Shaolin. Xena then sat for her fitting of her wedding uniform, being fidgety and moody. Delia was none too pleased with her, and her mood, and had her sit down and talk with her regarding why she was being that way and behaving in such a manner. Revealing that she was terrified, Xena finally told her. Having gotten friendly advice from Delia, with her thoughts about what her husband would have said, Xena returned to the fitting room and apologized for her behavior. Receiving a message that the Amazons had arrived, Xena went to Gabrielle, and they both changed to greet them. While greeting them and extending an invitation to dinner, the centaurs arrived. They had been on tenuous, peaceful grounds with the Amazons after the death of Queen Melissa's sister by the hand of one of the centaurs. At the formal dinner that evening, where the leaders and the escorts of both parties attended, Xena and Gabrielle sat on opposite ends of the table as it was a formal dinner. It was at the dinner that the unexpected occurred, an attack by a volley of arrows into the dinner guests. So that's where we left off, and we continue on now with the Conquer series, Petal the Rose, Chapter 15. There is no other way. Let that be plain. Princess Tamara cried out. The young Amazon looked down at her chest, to the growing crimson stain spreading across pale-colored leathers. An arrow protruded from a spot just above her right breast. It's odd the things one thinks about in such situations. I remember thinking that from the position of the arrow, at least the wound would not be fatal. My only words have been to shout, "Weapon!" That cry, in the middle of a royal banquet, was nearly enough to rouse the entire Empire's army. In an instant, less than the flicker of an eye, really, Atreus and the royal guard sprang into the posture of defense. As the entire incident took only moments, I was already moving to protect Gabrielle. Before I was halfway there, another arrow struck the young princess in the center of her chest. It all happened so quickly, not even her Amazon guard had yet reached the young woman. The force of the arrow strike flung her down across the table. Two more arrows in rapid succession embedded themselves deep in the wood of the table. It was the horror that I watched Gabrielle's next action. I was much too far away, especially not without knowing in which direction the attack was coming. Gabrielle quickly reached out and grabbed the young girl's body, pulling her to the ground. The sniper's arrows never stopped. They followed the two women all the way to the ground. Gabrielle threw her own slight figure across the fallen princess, and all I could do was watch as another arrow pierced the side of Gabrielle's body. Torova, Gabrielle's personal guard, deflected two more arrows with the metal of her blade, just as they would have surely found their mark in Gabrielle's back. Then, as suddenly as the attack began, it ended. I could see the fire of torches as my men entered the copse of trees near the palace wall. Either the culprits had been caught, or they had been left as silently as they appeared. My only concern was selfish. It was for the small blonde who risked her life for this Amazon stranger. Melosin and I knelt beside the two figures, fear etched deeply into the older Amazon's face. "Gabrielle!" I cried out of her unmoving figure. She stirred, but didn't completely lift herself up.
"Son of a buck!"
Torva hissed under her breath. I followed the guard's line of sight to the arrow that appeared embedded in Gabrielle's side. I'm sure the soldier was cursing herself now over her inability to stop all of the arrows. Again, Gabrielle's body moved.
"I'm all right, but the arrow has me pinned to the floor."
I reached in, running my hand along the shaft of the arrow. It had pierced Gabrielle's dress and the vest she wore, but Athena was surely making up for the young woman's previous lack of protection. It had lightly grazed her skin, enough to draw an extremely thin line of blood, but nothing more. It was sunk deeply into the terrace floor, trapping Gabrielle's body along with it. I ripped the arrow from the floor and pulled Gabrielle into my arms. I examined the arrow as I held her trembling figure against me. I recognized the markings along its shaft, and when I looked up again, Melissa's eyes met mine. There was a rage mixed with pain there that I had hoped never to feel within myself. Her eyes dropped to the arrow in my hand, but she said nothing. Melissa took her daughter into her own strong arms. The young princess was pale but still breathing. Kuros, who was attending the banquet, was there kneeling down along with us. He quickly examined the girl, but the girl's fate was obvious to even the untrained eye. A steady trickle of blood made its way from her mouth and nose, and her breath was short and uneven. My best guess was that the first arrow pierced her lung, and the second, her heart. Kuros looked up at Melosa, and the slight shake of his head told the queen all she needed to know.
"I could try to remove the arrows if you desire," Kuros said quietly, "to make her more comfortable."
Melosa seemed to be thinking about it for a moment, but Tamara raised her hand, as if waiting the thought away.
"No, mother, it doesn't hurt."
She coughed and more blood came from her mouth.
"It doesn't really hurt at all,"
she finished. Gabrielle moved from my embrace towards the young princess and used her own dress to wipe away the blood on the girl's face. Tamara smiled weakly and grasped Gabrielle's hand within her own.
"Thank you,"
the Amazon said.
"You risked your own life just for me. You're truly
everything the people have said to you, or I want you to have my rite of cast.
Tamara, think about what you're doing. Melissa responded immediately.
Mother, she did what only another Amazon would do. She did what only a sister would do.
Melissa looked up at Gabrielle, then over at me. My mind was reeling at the political implications this moment had, and I'm sure Melissa had the same thoughts in her own head. She was holding her dying daughter, but she was also a powerful queen. I'm sure there wasn't a notion about this whole thing that hadn't passed through my mind, that hadn't already occurred to her. She looked back down at Tamara, and tenderly stroked her face, nodding her head to concede her daughter's wishes.
Will you take my rite of cast, Gabrielle?
Tamara practically whispered the words.
I...
Gabrielle looked between Melissa and I. Handing a rite of cast down to you entitles you to Tamara's birthright and all she possesses as an Amazon. You will take her place in the eyes of our people. Melissa explained without emotion. It's up to you, Gabrielle, to accept or decline, I answered when her eyes met mine. Even I knew that this could change things, but to what extent, I had no way of knowing. Simply know that it can't change things between us, and it is a great honor. I watched as Tamara squeezed Gabrielle's hand, as a wave of pain must have come over her, and the small man looked on in anguish into the dying girl's eyes.
I'm sorry, Tamara. I'm sorry I wasn't quicker.
Tears filled Gabrielle's eyes and spilled down her cheeks.
Yes, I will accept your rite of cast.
Tamara smiled and squeezed Gabrielle's hand once more.
Don't worry, Mother. It hardly hurts at all.
The young girl assured Melissa. I'd never seen the queen cry before, but even I had tears in my eyes at the girl's strength.
Shh.
Rest now, Melissa whispered, stroking her daughter's face. Look for your Aunt Therese when you reach the land. She'll take care of you. Once the young princess was dead. With those last words, Melissa commended her daughter's soul to the Amazon land of the dead. It was with a great deal of pain that we watched the young princess take her last breath and die in her mother's arms. Once the young princess was dead, Melissa became the queen once more. She snapped up the arrow from the ground and jumped to her feet. We all saw the tail feathers and the markings. It was a centaur arrow, and I hoped to Athena that war was not going to begin within my own palace. Three of my royal guards stepped back, surrounding a confused Gabrielle. Melissa tossed the broken arrow towards Calliope.
This was not the work of a centaur. We don't murder innocents,
Calliope defended.
You've done it before,
Melissa hissed back.
Be reasonable, Melissa,
the centaur explained.
Why would we choose now, surrounded by 100 Amazons, and in the midst of the Conqueror's army? Think about it. It doesn't make sense.
Unless that's exactly what you want us to think. You killed my sister, and now the despicable cowards that you are killed my only child. Melissa took a step closer, her anger and grief outweighing her better judgment.
We should have wiped you out ages ago. I'll see that the roads to Amazonia run red with centaur blood. Don't push me, Amazon.
Calliope was beginning to lose his sense of humor. These are just the kinds of situations why no one is allowed to carry a weapon to a royal banquet. Different people, different beliefs, and old wounds never healed. I was the only one carrying a weapon, beside my soldiers, but that offered me little comfort. Amazons and centaurs turned loose upon one another. It wouldn't matter if they were armed or not.
No one starts anything in my palace!
I let them both in, but I didn't want this escalating beyond what I would control. It was preposterous. The idea that Calliope would set up an attack when he was hopelessly outnumbered. The centaur markings on the arrow looked incriminating, but even Melissa should be able to see that it was too easy. I realized just then that her grief was blinding her. Would I be any different if it was Gabrielle lying on the floor of the terrace?
Calliope, keep your numbered camp on the east side. They are not to leave Corinth, and under no circumstances are they to engage the Amazons. Melissa, take your daughter and return to your camp. You and your people will have your privacy while you mourn for Tamara. You may take her ashes to Amazonia, but not until we straighten this out. Know this.
I looked from the centaur to the Amazon queen.
I will get to the bottom of this, and I will have no one declare war in my empire.
Melosa stared all of us down, but it was Ephany who cajoled her queen into returning to their encampment.
Melosa turned to Gabrielle, flanked as a small blonde was by her personal guard.
Princess.
Melosa bowed her head. Whether Gabrielle knew it or not, Melosa's actions were very important. She was officially recognizing Gabrielle as having taken Tamara's rite of caste. Without that official notice, anyone of royal blood could challenge Tamara's dying request.
I'm so sorry,
Gabrielle said softly.
Melosa knelt beside her daughter and looked up at me.
Hear me, Conqueror, she began. If I find the Centaurs are guilty of this crime against me and my nation, it will be war.
In a show of strength that surprised me, Melosa lifted her daughter into her arms.
Melosa, I responded, go and be with your people. Our hearts grieve just the same for your loss.
Just the same, Conqueror.
She took one step toward me, and I could see Atreus cold beside me, watching the heartbroken woman with a wary eye.
You hold your only child as they die in your arms. Then you tell me if it feels the same.
Come, my queen. Ephany quickly intervened before I had a chance to say more. The warrior instructed two other women to take Tamara's body from the queen's arms. They led their queen and the slain princes from the palace. Ephany lingered, walking out at last. I saw something in her eyes, something that told me that perhaps she didn't subscribe to Melosa's philosophy about the Centaurs. Then again, perhaps it was only my imagination.
Help her to try and see reason, I offered to Ephany.
I'll do what I can, Lord Conqueror.
Ephany returned just before she walked from the palace.
We searched the entire palace grounds, Lord Conqueror. This was all we were able to find.
The lieutenant placed two quivers, a longbow and a crossbow, upon the table before me.
They were under the trees, the olive grove directly in line of the side of the outer portico. I have 3 squads, men searching the woods outside the palace walls for any signs of snipers.
Good work, Beria.
Atreus answered for me, dismissing the officer. It felt like candle marks had gone by, when in reality, only moments had passed. My soldiers were nothing if not efficient. They already had the evidence in their possession.
You know as well as I that a centaur didn't commit this crime.
Calliope's voice was first to refute the physical evidence.
I only know what I see before me, and it certainly doesn't look good, I answered.
A centaur would never be so obvious to leave all his weapons there in plain sight.
Calliope raged.
It's obvious they were planted to make it look like one of us. Open your eyes, Xena.
I do have my eyes open, my friend. Yes, it is quite obviously a ruse. But by whom? I agree that it looks as though the items are planted there to cast suspicion your way. But on the other hand, if it were me, I might think it a perfect plan. If I were to leave such obvious clues, everyone would think that they would have been planted, and I would be getting away with it. Quite literally, murder.
I turned toward my captain. Atreus, see that Gabrielle is taken to our rooms and guards placed inside as well as outside.
Air, Conqueror.
No!
Gabrielle's small cry was fairly muffled by the ring of soldiers already taking her welfare quite seriously. Suddenly, every eye in the room turned, first to me, then to Gabrielle. I'm sure it had been many, many seasons since anyone said no to me in the palace, if anyone ever had. All eyes focused on me. Seeing me do nothing but the young woman's seeming insolence, all heads then turned and concentrated on Gabrielle. She appeared suddenly nervous. The expression on her face told me she just realized what she said to me in front of my soldiers and our guests.
I mean...
She pushed one of the young soldiers aside to come stand before me.
My lord, I don't want to be apart from you,
Gabrielle said in a low voice. I smiled then. I'm not sure why, but Gabrielle's concerns had a way of touching me in such a fashion.
Gabrielle, I touched her cheek. I drew her to me, not caring whether I received stares or if my soldiers thought less of me. I took her face in both my hands, looking into her eyes.
Gabrielle, what I need to do, I can do better if I don't have to worry for you. Please, do as I say, just this once, eh?
She wore an expression of sad resignation, but nodded her head all the same.
You promised to take care, Conqueror,
she whispered to me.
My smile grew larger at the remark that was part admonition, part taunt. I promised, little one. I answered, kissing her on the forehead. No one will best me today.
You know, that Calliopus, or any centaur for that matter, couldn't have assassinated that girl in cold blood like that,
Solon defended his adopted father. I only know what I see, Solon. I want to examine the area where these were found for myself. Then, and only then, I will make my judgment.
Then I'm going with,
my son answered.
I'll go as well,
Calliopus answered.
Look!
I started before hearing the husky voice behind me.
Well, I suppose it's only fair that the Amazon's interest be represented as well, then.
Effany hopped over the low patio wall to join us. She hadn't been there the whole time. I would have heard her if she had. Besides, she now wore an Amazon short blade on her hip, so I knew she'd gone back to her tent first. I briefly wondered at my sanity, going out into the forest with a couple of very irate, sworn enemies, but once again, Effany seemed almost hospitable towards the centaur who now stood beside her. She lost point with me, though, when she turned to Gabrielle.
Princess,
she acknowledged. The Amazon practically spat the word in Gabrielle's direction.
Keep some civility about you, Amazon,
I growled,
and remember who it is you're speaking to.
She seemed to come to her senses, and the expression on her face changed, softening a bit.
Your Highness,
she added in a more even tone.
Please, Effany, won't you call me Gabrielle?
That seemed to throw the Amazon off her stride a bit. She opened her mouth to speak, then, appearing nonplussed, changed to mind and held her tongue. I wanted to laugh out loud, and I would have, had the situation been less severe. Gabrielle had a way of taming the beast in many a hard heart. I'd seen it happen repeatedly. Could one Amazon warrior possibly hold up under the onslaught from my small consort? We would see. I kissed Gabrielle once more and watched the six soldiers who escorted her to our private rooms swallowed her from my sight. I have to have words with Atreus, however, when he realized just what I planned.
Lord Conqueror, it seems risky and foolish to go out into the woods without a squad of men to watch your back,
Atreus chided. That, my dear captain, is why I have you, I answered gloomily. Atreus, I understand your reservations, but a whole troop of soldiers tramping around out there will be lucky if they haven't already destroyed some important bits of evidence. It's important that we go this alone.
Aye, Conqueror,
Atreus answered, and then glanced around at the faces in our small party. I could see he didn't hold much trust in our unholy group.
Let's go, then.
I spoke up and made my way down the palace steps. I had been sitting in the dark for quite some time. In fact, it was nearly dawn. It was my favorite chair, in front of my favorite window, at my favorite time of the day. The view looked down into the rose garden, and out across the rooftops into the villages that lay just within the palace gates. I was feeling a bit lonely, and I suppose I could have simply gone in and awakened Gabrielle, but I was so tired, and just then it seemed like such an effort. We had found more than I thought we would last night, in a way, more than I wanted us to find. My soldiers had done a better job than I earlier gave them credit for. They had cordoned off the area they suspected the snipers had shot from. Beyond searching the area, however, there was little more they could do. What few clues we did find did not serve our centaur friends well, the weapons we already had, of course. The grove of olive trees was set atop the bit of land that sloped upward. The trees stopped at the palace wall, but continued the other side. The area was thick and overgrown, yet had recently been trampled. Technically speaking, a man on horseback might have made the sparse tracks we found. I knew better than that. We were having a dry spell, common during the end of the growing season. The soil under our feet was hard as stone. For the hoof print we saw to have been that visible, the horse would have had to have been a massive beast. No, it was surely a centaur print, scuffed into the dirt. I remember the look on Effany's face as Calliopus's dry comment as the Amazon knelt down to examine the marks.
It doesn't look good for us, does it, Amazon?
No, it certainly doesn't. The Amazon's expression struck me as considerably odd. Effany bore none of the animosity with which her sisters enjoyed expressing towards the centaurs. She almost looked as if it pained her as much as Calliopus. I wonder what Effany knew that caused her to act so differently towards the centaurs and the rest of the people. I had the worst feeling that the whole situation wasn't going to end well. Melissa was already acting like a gourd full of black powder about to blow. Jamar's body would be put to the flames this evening, and then Melos's mourning period would end. At that time, the Queen would be free to exact her revenge. Once Effany told her Queen of the evidence we found, I knew it would take no time at all before Melos started a war. Could I blame her? Would I have reacted any differently? Grief takes on its toll on psyche, and Melos had been through more than her fair share of loss throughout the seasons. I thought of Gabrielle and the iniquity of the situation. We were to be married in a matter of days. It wasn't fair that the day should be the happiest in her life to be marred by this tragedy, not only the death of young Tamara, but a war, and on our doorstep. I closed my eyes and breathed in the cool outside air that blew in from the window. As often happens when I think of Gabrielle, I can hear a voice inside of my heart calling to me. Only this time, when I opened my eyes, she was there, softly calling my name.
Zena,
she whispered again. I smiled up at her, and she settled herself upon my lap, my arms immediately wrapping around a slight figure. I wasn't completely certain who was comforting whom, but I do know it felt rather good.
I could hear your deep thoughts all the way to the bedroom, my love.
Gabrielle laid her head on my shoulder, touching her lips lightly to the exposed skin on my neck.
It didn't go well, did it?
I shook my head and explained the events of the evening to her.
All that seems a bit too easy, doesn't it? I mean, one of Calliope's men did it, even on orders. He wouldn't be foolish enough to leave so many clues that would be traced back to him, would he?
Gabrielle asked. You see that, little one, along with me, the centaurs, and even Effany. Melissa just lost her only child. Somehow, I don't think she's going to be in the mood to listen to reason.
But Tamara wasn't her only child,
Gabrielle added. What do you mean? Where did you hear that?
Two of the Amazons came back to see me after you left this evening.
Gabrielle!
Zena, it's all right. Torava and Sentius were both guarding me. As a matter of fact, I could barely see past them as they had such a human wall around me.
I chuckled at the vision in my head, but still it worried me. It's just that those Amazons...
could have been assassins. I know, Zena. I'm not a fool, my love. I tried to take precautions.
Forgive me, little one. I'm only thinking of you. I smiled at my own embarrassment and my constant underestimation of this woman before me. Sometimes I forget that you're a competent woman, and not a young girl who needs my constant protection.
You're forgiven,
she smiled sweetly.
But only because I love you so much.
So, what did these Amazons want?
They came with instructions from a woman named Langris. They said she was the high priestess in the Amazonian temple of Artemis. Doesn't that sound odd, Zena? That a priestess would travel with a delegation of Amazons so far from home?
Odd is exactly the word I would use. What kind of Amazon delegations travel with their queen, princess, and Artemis's priestess in one band? It didn't seem smart, especially for Melissa. What kind of instructions did she give you? I asked.
About my part in accepting Tamara's rite of caste. Some of the things they said, Zena. Do you know these women expect me to live with them in the Amazon territory?
Sorry to override them, but that won't be happening any time soon, I added.
Good.
Gabrielle smiled at me.
I was a little worried there for a moment. They told me some very interesting traditions about accepting the rite of caste. Basically, I'm an Amazon. From the moment Tamara died, I inherited everything that she possessed and all that her bloodline entitles her to.
That does sound about right. I'm sorry, love, but there wasn't enough time to explain it to you. Gabrielle, you've been given a great honor. These women don't give up their rite of caste to anyone but sister Amazons. For someone of royal blood to do so, well... it's practically unheard of. I believe Tamara saw what I've always seen in you. Gabrielle blushed and lowered her head. In that endearing way she had, I couldn't help but smile.
That's the only reason I accepted, Zena. That young woman lost her life. No, someone took her life from her. She had so much to look forward to, so many things she had planned. She told me so much about the life she wanted for herself and her people. She told me that she had a girlfriend back in the Amazon village. I guess I just thought that to decline a gift would not only be an insult, but but it would negate the dreams she had. It was as though if I keep going, Tamara's spirit can still experience some of the future. Does that make any sense at all?
Gabrielle asked, brushing the hair from her face. Gods, could Athena have been any kinder to me? To bring a woman like this into my life was more than I deserved. Yes, love, it makes perfect sense. Even though you won't be living there, it's still a big responsibility you're taking on. Are you sure you're ready for it?
I think so. Will it disturb you, Xena? Do anything that might embarrass you as a ruler of the Empire?
Gabrielle asked, her brow furrowed in concern. I can always find problems with the situation if I think about it long enough, but there's certainly nothing that would embarrass me. It will probably be a feather in my cap. I grinned in her direction. I can just hear the tavern bards now, detailing the stormy relationship between the Conqueror and her Amazon bride. I laughed out loud, and Gabrielle seemed unable to keep from laughing right along with me. Gabrielle, I began seriously. If it's your wish to see this through, then I'll be behind you in your decision.
Even if it conflicts with your wishes and desires?
She asked me in earnest. Even then, because I love you, and because your wishes are my hopes. It's as simple as that, little one. Now tell me about this other daughter of Melosa's.
Who? Oh, yes. Well, they said she was Melosa's daughter, but not her blood child. I couldn't seem to find out any more without appearing nosy. Do you know what it means?
I thought about the statement for a moment. It wasn't unusual for royalty to adopt a protege, especially when they had no heir. What I couldn't understand was why Melosa would adopt an heir when she already had one, unless the queen had performed the adoption before Tamara was born. Did the women say anything about how old this daughter was? I asked.
As a matter of fact, they said she was twice as old as Tamara. The funny thing about that, Xena.
Gabrielle hesitated. Funny in what way?
Well, the two women didn't seem to care much for this other daughter. Supposedly she was expected to be there when we first greeted the delegation. They hinted around that mother and daughter had words, and the daughter stalked off. Didn't seem like anything out of the ordinary to the two Amazons who spoke to me.
I wondered at Gabrielle's amazing abilities. I remember trying to interrogate captured Amazons. We starved them, tortured them, and deprived them of everything but most meager necessities of life to get them to talk. I never had one even give me the time of day. Gabrielle, on the other hand. Gabrielle, how long were those women here?
I'm not certain. Perhaps a candle mark. Is it important?
Gabrielle asked. I could do no more than smile. No, little one, it's not important. I was just thinking about something that happened a long time ago. I finally allowed myself a chuckle. So, I began again. I don't suppose you got one of your new sisters to give you this elusive daughter's name, did you? I asked, continuing with a grin.
Well, Conqueror,
Gabrielle teased.
Just so happens that I did. I remembered it. Especially since I never heard a name like that used before. Her name's Valeska.
To be continued in Chapter 16, Besieged and Taken, Fair Courageous Queen. There was a loud gasp, and I turned to see Gabrielle bolt upright in bed. She hadn't cried out, but I could hear her audible breath, which she seemingly struggled to get under control. Gabrielle? I sat up beside her. When she turned to look at me, her face held such a blank look. It was as if she didn't recognize me, or at very least, as if she was straining to remember me. The expression only lasted a few heartbeats, and then she physically shook her head to concentrate on her present surroundings. Gabrielle, I repeated.
I think I must have been dreaming.
Gabrielle replied hesitantly. A bad dream?
Partly, but then somewhat, well, confusing.
She ran her fingers through her hair, then looked up at me with a sleepy grin.
I guess I'm still half asleep, but I'm all right, really.
Come here, love. Gabrielle settled herself in my embrace, as we both lay back down against the pillows. I wasn't sure what to make of her sleepy explanation, but since her breathing had already turned into a deep, relaxed sound of sleep, I thought little more about it. Why is it that, in hindsight, it's the smallest of things that come to be the most important? Every soldier in Corinth was on alert this night. Numerous fires illuminated the southern hills outside the palace gates. For one full pass of the sun, Melosa had been in private mourning. I wanted to find out more about the other daughter of hers, but the queen was in seclusion, and even I couldn't bring myself to intrude upon her grief. Gabriella had been sequestered with a number of the Amazons, along with their priestess, for quite some time. I lived with Cyan and her Amazons for a short time, and I learned as much as I could about their history and customs. I knew that even though Gabrielle's part in tonight's ceremony would be small, the priestess was most probably filling my contour in on some of that history. I stood with Atreus, me looking less like the conqueror than a fidgety spouse. I suppose I should have felt honored, considering that few non-Amazons were ever allowed to witness an Amazon princess being committed to the flames. It's only that I had a lot weighing on my mind just then. I was wondering how smoothly this Amazon ceremony was going to go, how Gabrielle will handle this whole situation, and whether I would be able to stop a certain Amazon queen from waging a senseless battle within the centaurs. I have to say that every one of those thoughts dissipated into thin air the moment I saw Gabrielle walk out of that tent. Gabrielle was dressed in a short leather skirt and halter, a very short skirt, and not really enough to even call a halter. Her neck, upper arms, and waist were encircled with feathered bead ornaments. Now I suppose that I'd seen more revealing Amazon's wear in my time. Actually, the women who flanked both Gabrielle and the priestess were wearing less than my future bride. If the truth be known, I certainly wasn't averse to seeing Gabrielle's beautiful body. It's simply that I had planned on being the only one to ever see this much of it. I could feel the familiar heat creep up my neck, and I looked around, watching everyone else watch Gabrielle. "What are you looking at?" I hissed to Atreus. He had his mouth open a slight bit, mostly in surprise, I'm sure.
"Me?"
he answered with uncharacteristic embarrassment.
"Yes, you. Quit looking at her that way," I commanded.
"Me?" he stammered again. "You keep saying that like I'm talking to someone else."
"No, I mean, it's just that looking, I would never, for Athena's sake, she's like a daughter,"
he was finally able to say. "Oh," it was the only thing I could think of to say. It made sense, though. Gabrielle looked good. In fact, she looked damn good. And as I studied the women who were sneaking glances as she passed their way, I realized something. My first instinctual feelings of jealousy, then anger, were based on emotions that belonged to the conqueror, not the woman I had since become. It would have been so easy to let the beast come out and roam over a situation like this, but this moment wasn't about me. Of course, we stood there as a way of saying goodbye to a young woman who lost her life so much too soon, but it was more than that. In some way, this moment belonged to Gabrielle. I had no idea how we would eventually handle her status as an Amazon, or even the fact that she was Amazon royalty. I did know that she was taking this honor seriously, and that it meant something to her. Perhaps because it was her first time in her young life that people looked up to her for something that she alone had done, and not because she was my consort. Whatever the reason, I realized it wouldn't be the first time I would be tested in such a manner. I had grown up on the battlefield, thinking that you had to show your power to be respected. That was fine for the battlefield, but it would only serve to make me a tyrant when used in everyday life. It would also humiliate Gabrielle, and lower her status with the people. I think I would loathe to do. I took a deep breath and had a rather comfortable thought. So what if 100 Amazon eyes were now coveting my consort? The key word was my. In my heart, I knew whom Gabrielle loved, and when she walked up to me, my stomach flipped a very little bit as I saw the exact sentiment in her eyes.
"Xena, we have to talk,"
Gabrielle whispered between clenched teeth, her lips chased into a forced smile.
"This is what they want me to wear. Might as well be out here naked."
I grinned heartily at that. Knowing this wasn't Gabrielle's choice put me even more at ease. Let the Amazons look if they wanted to. She was mine. And suddenly I reveled in the thought that I possessed something completely unattainable to them.
"You look absolutely breathtaking, my love,"
I whispered back in reassurance.
"That's not all, Xena. I may have to kill a centaur,"
she hissed again.
"What?"
I made no pretense of lowering my voice this time.
"Come on, we need to talk."
I began to usher her back into the tent she just exited. The two Amazons that had obviously been assigned to guard the new princess were close on our heels. Gabrielle entered the tent first, then me. When the two guards attempted to follow, I turned and growled at them.
Don't even think about it.
I don't know if it was the fire in my eyes or the smoke coming from my ears, but they suddenly realized they could just as easily guard her from outside the tent. Gabriel was waiting for me as I got inside.
Xena, these women have some seriously one-sided ideas about the centaurs, she said.
I suppose that's to be expected. They've been at odds for them for most of their lives, I answered.
Well, when you look at it that way...
Gabriel trailed off. I saw her features soften. It was uncharacteristic of Gabriel not to see the other side of the coin, but her own fury and worry had gotten the best of her. Now, how about what you said out there? I motioned with one hand. Who wants you to kill a centaur, and why?
They're pretty convinced here that a centaur did it, Xena. I didn't say a word about what you found the other night, but it wouldn't have mattered if I had. They're determined in thinking that a centaur killed Tamara, and they don't seem very concerned about whether they catch the guilty one or not. The only one who doesn't seem convinced is Satina. She's their priestess. In fact, she doesn't say much at all, which is a little unnerving. She watches me in the oddest way.
Sweetheart, the killing? I prompted.
Oh, yes. Do you know they said that once they catch whoever was responsible for Tamara's murder? Actually, their words were, once we catch the centaur responsible, I'm the one who has to execute the sentence, which will be death. Something about me accepting Tamara's rite of caste, and because of that I have to exact her revenge. Xena, I don't think I can kill anyone. Not in cold blood like that.
I know that, love. Gabrielle stepped into my arms, and I held her that way for a few moments. Don't worry. You're not going to be killing anyone, least of all any centaurs.
Promise?
She asked. I promise, little one. We'll figure something out, okay? She nodded, and just as we kissed and pulled away from one another, the Amazon guards were clearing their throats. They cautiously entered the tent, requesting Gabrielle's presence. She nodded to them and started after them. I pulled her back the last moment to whisper in her ear. Remember, little one, you belong to me, as well as the Amazons. I smiled and I felt her lean back into me. Torova and Atreus are here as your guards also. I don't know or trust everyone here. If anything does happen, stay with those two and I'll know you're safe. I kissed her ear and watched as she nodded her head in understanding. We left the tent and I walked beside Gabrielle, the two guards apparently flustered at my continued presence. They followed along and then looked even more confused when Atreus and Torova slipped into step with us. We were stopped by a group of warriors I accepted as Melos's royal guard, some 20 feet from the funeral pyre. The queen stood directly next to the pyre, accompanied by Artemis's priestess and another Amazon I didn't recognize. She was tall, muscular, and had auburn hair. I wondered if she was the other daughter. Her eyes appeared filled with tears as she stared up the platform upon which Tamara's body laid. Ephany came towards us and stopped before Gabrielle. Could tell that there was still a certain animosity residing within the Amazon toward Gabrielle. She didn't go out of her way to be courteous, but then she didn't do or say anything that could be considered intentionally mean. It was more the disdainful expression her eyes held when she settled on Gabrielle. Your presence is requested at the family side, Princess, Emphany said flatly. She motioned with her hand, and the two Amazon guards moved to the front to lead Gabrielle away. I felt Gabrielle squeeze my hand, and I returned a slight pressure. She followed the Amazons, and Atreus and Torova moved along with her. Just the princess, Ephany said. Gabrielle looked back at me, and I realized she was unsure what to do. She may be your princess, but she is also about to become the queen to the Greek Empire. Either they go with her, or we all stay here, I stated. Ephany didn't seem to think it was worth causing a situation over. She shrugged her shoulders and waved again to the two guards in the lead. I was a little surprised when Ephany stayed behind, electing to stand beside me during the ceremony. The ceremony began, and as watched the women at the pyre interact with one another, one thing became clear. Melosa was in obvious grief. It showed in her face and her body language. Gabrielle appeared somber, sad, and nervous. "Who's the woman beside Melosa?" I asked Ephany under my breath. Velasca, Melosa's adopted daughter. Adopted? So, She's not a princess, then?
I asked a question I already knew the answer to, but wanted to hear how the Amazon would answer.
No. Only blood family may be considered in line for the throne, unless they become a family through rite of caste. However, Velasca would have become princess upon Tamara's death, because she would then be Melosa's only heir. Your consort seems to have put a crimp in those plans, Lord Conqueror.
Effany shot me a sidelong glance, and I heard what I wanted in her voice. Seemed she didn't care for Velasca's royal position, any more than she did for Gabrielle's new Amazon title. Things began to look like Effany could be one of those fanatical Amazons, unwilling to allow outsiders in so easily. Of course, that was no crime, but the whole scenario began to take on a dangerous affair for Gabrielle. Suddenly, I saw an adopted daughter, whose only obstacle to the throne was her younger sister. If she somehow went over top, killing her sister, would she stop there? She probably had no idea that Tamara would have given her right of castaway, to a stranger no less. She tried to eliminate Gabrielle as well. I shook myself mentally. I was adding things incorrectly, jumping to quick and easy conclusions. Velasca had the motive along with the opportunity, but what of all the Centaur's evidence? The weapons may have been circumstantial, but there's only one thing heavy enough to make Centaur tracks in stone dry earth, and that's a Centaur. Plus, something we didn't discuss out in those trees. Amazons are excellent archers. Incredible, even. But the distance from the grove of the trees to the patio we dined on was tremendous. That was most of the reason we never worried about more than occasionally patrolling the area. I couldn't see the best Amazon archer hitting Tamara with as much accuracy as those arrows did. No. Either a centaur or a being with astonishing strength would have had to shoot those arrows. That's where it fell apart. Even I know there isn't an Amazon on Earth who can collaborate with a centaur. I never know anything to be worth the two putting their differences and long-standing hatred away for.
Why did Melosa say when you told her about what we found?
I leaned over and asked.
I haven't told her yet,
Effany answered, never taking her eyes from the pyre that was now being lit.
She's been in mourning,
she added. What do you think she'll do? I asked.
I like not to think about that one,
Effany commented in her flat alto. Me too, I quickly added. Effany surprised and worried me at the same time. Any other Amazon here would have jumped at the chance to bring the bad word against the Centaurs, but she hadn't even attempted it. Yes, Melosa was in mourning, but something like this, I would have chucked protocol and killed myself attempting to reach her. Effany's amiable behavior towards the Centaurs could have been a voice of reason among her people, someone I might want to ally myself with. On the other hand, she might just be the kind of person to become partners with a centaur for a like-minded cause. There was only one thing to be done. Trust no one. See that Gabrielle was never without protection, and sit down with Calliope. There'd been a great deal of bad blood between the Centaur Nation and myself. It was not time to see if there were any centaurs around who still remembered the good old days.
It's an insult to even think any of the centaurs here could be responsible!
Solon's tone was one of righteous indignation, and I wasn't sure I disagreed with him. I was probably seeking for answers where there were none, but I was running out of time and clues. Last evening we watched Tamara's funeral pyre lit the southern sky. I was prepared to be confronted by Melosa with her demand for centaur blood over the murder of her daughter. I was quite surprised when, after candle marks of keeping vigil at her daughter's funeral pyre, she simply looked up at me and then turned and walked away. She was a smart woman. Her grief was controlling her right then, and even she knew enough not to want to meet me in that condition. I would suffer this woman much for her grief, and the price she'd pay, but even my tolerance had its limits.
Keep a civil tongue about you, Solon,
Calliope warned his adopted son.
The Conqueror has good reason to ask.
Thank you, my friend. I don't know whether this will help us or curse us. Solon, I've lived long enough to know that no one species holds the commodity on truth and integrity. I'll not have anyone convicted falsely, but neither can I allow war to begin between the Centaurs and the Amazons. I'm doing the absolute best I can in this situation. I answered Solon as honestly as I could. I'm sure you heard the tone of defeat in my voice, even though I took pains to hide it. Solon, most of my life has been spent in conquering and taking, no matter that it already belonged to another. Became my own manifest destiny to become the destroyer of nations. A witch prophesied it, and I gave her the blood and the means to bring it about.
Along the line somewhere, a woman like me makes enemies. Loose ends that make you vulnerable someday. I don't pretend that I wasn't this woman, so do me a favor. Please don't insult me by saying you know of no one who would like to see my head on a spike for some past deed. I finished my little speech, and when I looked up into Solon's face, he had an odd sort of expression on his face. I think it might have been fear, or maybe even concern. I suppose I could have been reaching there, but the look stayed with me. I took a chance on the young man, who had changed so much. I decided to tell he and Calliopus all that I suspected. Something told me I could trust Solon now, especially when I played my trump card by revealing Gabriel's involvement.
Why would someone hold a grudge against you want to kill Gabriel?
Solon asked quickly. I told him then what I thought about an Amazon and a centaur working together. That odd look returned to his face. Once again I could see the worry plagued him. Solon and Gabriel had grown close in the last fortnight. If I were a young conqueror, jealousy and rage would have consumed me by now. Gabrielle met with Solon, more for him than herself, I feared. She had every right not to forgive his act so quickly. Somewhere in their time together, however, Gabrielle and Solon became friends. I do not attempt to understand how the changing took place, nor will I question it. Both of these beloved people, the child of my body and the woman of my heart, meant much more to me than words could adequately express. The fact that I didn't have to choose between them meant just as much. The next two candle marks were spent going over the names and history of the 22 centaurs in Calliopus's delegation. We talked about their habits, the kind of politics they played, and exactly where they were on the evening of Tamara's murder. I stood and stretched my muscles that had grown tight while sitting. We had our meeting in the Great Hall, always perfect for a centaur meeting. The large columns opened out into the portico on the east side of the room. High, easy access was necessary when entertaining centaurs indoors. I suppose it was this access to the outdoors which made it so easy to hear the commotion around the corner of the palace steps. Gabrielle materializing in the hall, flanked by two guards, was my next clue that we had trouble brewing. The words she spoke didn't help any situation.
Xena, I think Ephany finally told Melosa.
Atreus, take Gabrielle back inside, I quietly said as soon as we exited the palace. We found ourselves facing 100 armed Amazons on one side of the area, outside of the palace, centaurs on the other, and 5 formations of my men in between.
No, Xena, please, I need to be here, Gabrielle pleaded.
She was right in a way. It may have been quirk of fate that brought it about, but Gabrielle was now an Amazon. I didn't have time to agree or not before Melosa was at the steps, followed by Ephany and Velasca. I stepped in front of Gabrielle slightly, my protective mode taking hold, I suppose.
The time for talk is over, Conqueror! Melosa raged. It's obvious you're protecting these bastards! Will you give me my people's satisfaction or not?
Nothing is apparent from where I stand, Melosa, I answered.
Those sons of Cerebus murdered my daughter! Amazon slut!
This came from Calliopus, who finally lost his temper.
Freaks!
Someone from Amazon's side yelled out.
All right!
My voice boomed out. I was trying my level best not to lose my temper, but these people were pushing me to my breaking point. I slowly walked down the steps, anger evident in my very gait. I was heartbeats away from screaming at the top of my voice that they could all go to Hades. I reached the Amazons, and even Melosa cautiously backed up. I could feel my hand shake as it ached to pull my blade from its scabbard. I clenched my jaw and tried to take a calming breath.
Now,
I began.
We are all going to take a deep breath. We are not going to start a war that our children would pay for by calling one another names. This is not worth going to battle over.
It is to me, Conqueror,
Melosa responded.
You saw the evidence. Everything points to a centaur.
Melosa, it may look obvious to you in your grief, but the evidence truly is circumstantial.
Gabrielle was suddenly beside me, her hand on my forearm.
I'm not surprised you feel this way, Gabrielle. Your loyalties are certainly divided here. But did you learn nothing of the centaurs from your teachings with Satina?
Melosa commented.
I did learn, Melosa. I learned that your people are being taught a very one-sided version of the history between the Amazons and the centaurs. I've also learned from the centaurs themselves They are proud and stubborn, but no more so than you.
You've not seen what I have, Gabrielle,
Melissa growled.
Can you tell me a centaur did not kill my child, Conqueror?
The queen directed a question towards me. No, I answered sadly. I cannot. Just as I cannot say that it wasn't an Amazon or anyone else.
Then we go to war, Melissa hissed. I want to see centaur blood on my blade.
I can't let you do that, my queen.
Effany stepped up from behind the woman, and Melissa did a small half-turn to look at her.
As much as it pains me to agree with something that she might say, I must also agree with the princess.
You!
Melissa seemed genuinely taken back. She stepped back and folded her arms across her chest. Melissa now appeared more amused than angry. I didn't know what Effany was trying to do, but it seemed her words had calmed the older woman in some fashion. Although, I believe Effany's words touched something in Gabrielle. The small blonde had also crossed her arms, an irate flush beginning to show in her cheeks.
You surprise me, Effany. What do you expect to do? Challenge me?
Melissa asked.
We both know that's something I cannot do, my queen.
Then Effany looked directly at Gabrielle, who was still fuming at the Amazon's last comment. We all know that only another royal can challenge the queen. I caught the inference immediately, and suddenly knew what Effany was playing at. It was happening so fast I wasn't sure how I felt about using Gabrielle as bait. I remembered the old law that went along with any royal challenge, and suddenly knew Gabrielle would be safe.
That's right.
I gave the slightest bit of an elbow to Gabrielle, and repeated Effany's words. Only royalty. I stared into Gabrielle's uncomprehending eyes. Can contest the queen in a challenge. Gabrielle wasn't stupid, but sometimes the most obvious things are ones we miss. I swear if the girl said, oh, aloud, I would have cuffed her on the back of the head. The oddest thing just happened then. I noticed that off to Melissa's left, at the bottom of the palace steps, Valeska opened her mouth to speak. It appeared very much as she were going to administer a challenge. Before her voice could be heard, however, Gabrielle snapped into action. She must have suddenly guessed all the innuendos, because she nearly jumped up when she said the word.
I challenge you!
Hundreds of eyes trained themselves upon the small blonde, who smiled and looked if she wanted to make herself invisible.
I think, Gabrielle added.
Do you or don't you, Gabrielle?
Melissa added. Somehow, the current situation had gone from possible bloodshed to entertainment. I knew that Melissa was fond of Gabrielle. Besides, the queen wasn't a fool. I'm quite sure it was obvious to her what Effany and I were trying to do. Rather than let anger rule her, I believe Melissa couldn't help but be mildly amused at the small girl challenging the queen for her throne.
Yes. Yes, I do,
Gabrielle answered confidently.
Gabrielle, Melissa drawled, do you understand what a royal challenge is, don't you?
Gabrielle looked between Effany and I, as we both nodded our heads up and down slightly.
Yes, yes, of course I do, she answered.
And you do realize that you will have to fight me?
Fight?
Gabrielle's voice rose a notch, and she looked between Effany and myself once more.
To the death?
Melissa finished.
What? Oh, I...
Of course, Effany began. Amazon laws state that a member of the royal family may choose a champion.
Someone, a trusted warrior, to fight in her stead.
I finished Effany's thoughts, directing my words more towards Gabrielle than Melissa.
I know what the law states, Effany. I would like to know whose side you're on here, however,
Melissa asked.
The side of my people, my queen,
the Amazon responded.
So, Gabrielle, will you battle yourself, or will you select a champion?
Melissa asked, curiosity in her direct gaze.
I'll be her champion.
Effany and I both said in unison, taking a step forward. Everyone froze at the moment. Effany and I turned to look at one another, and suddenly I felt as I were playing a part in play by Euripides. Not only felt a little foolish, but I'm positive I looked the part as well.
She's my wife,
I hissed at the Amazon.
I'm sorry. Did I miss that wedding, Lord Conqueror? Just what? I stated only to be interrupted.
Will you two please sort this out another time?
Gabrielle turned to us both and growled under her breath. You seems you have more than willing enough champions, Princess. So which will it be? Will you select a champion, Gabrielle?
Once more, Gabrielle's head turned to look to the blonde Amazon and myself, standing side by side. We both nodded our heads to the young woman.
No, I'll fight for myself,
Gabrielle answered.
What?
Two voices in unison again, mine and the Amazon's.
Do you mind?
I growled at Effany. Gabrielle, take a moment and think what you're saying, I implored her. I suppose I could have ordered the whole thing stopped, but how would that make Gabrielle look in front of the Amazons, as well as the people of Greece? I wanted them to know she was not simply a pretty toy of mine, but I didn't want them to see her die before her wedding day. Gabrielle temporarily ignored me.
I won't fight you to the death, though.
And just what kind of parameters would you set for this combat?
Melissa questioned.
That if I win, you will not proceed with your war. You will listen to reason with your head, and not your heart.
And if you lose?
I haven't anything to offer,
Gabrielle answered softly.
Haven't you, Gabrielle? I knew exactly what Melissa was thinking by the way she looked at Gabrielle just then, and I would have none of that. The Amazon Queen surprised me, though, when she continued.
If I were a younger woman, I'd make you put up your charms as part of the wager. I like you, Gabrielle, and if you think you have enough skill to best me, then that's what all will wager. I'll give you a candle mark to compose yourself, and then I'll meet you on the Conqueror's training field.
Melissa walked away, but stopped and turned back to the small blonde.
What weapons would you like to use, Princess? I watched as a different expression stole across Gabrielle's face. She looked down at the palms of her hands, slowly turning them over as to examine them.
My hands,
she said at last. Melissa smiled as she were indulging a small child in a nonsensical request. Very well. Hand-to-hand combat it is. She walked off, followed by the Amazons. Anthony was at her last to leave.
I hope you taught her well.
She tossed at me in that flat, dry sort of tone she had.
Gabrielle, are you insane? I mean, have you recently hit your head or suffered some sort of massive brain injury that I don't know anything about?
I shouted. We were alone in our rooms. Gabrielle sat on the bed, her hands clasped together in her lap, patiently looking up at me. I paced and I raged. I suppose it was all fear that was causing me to yell like this. The good thing is that I think Gabrielle knew that because she just sat there, as if waiting for my fury to calm, knowing it eventually would. Like the summer storms that passed through quickly, all the thunder and lightning, my ire did finally calm. I sat down beside Gabrielle, ran my fingers through my hair. I sighed deeply.
Little one, do you understand what's happening? I'm not a fool, Xena. I know of what I've done,
Gabrielle answered. It's the first time she's spoken to me so sharply, and I could see she was afraid as well.
You can change your mind. Choose me as your champion. Ares balls, choose the Amazon. But don't try to fight Melissa. She's almost as good as I am, Gabrielle. She could hurt you, even if it's not a fight to the death.
Xena, I...
Gabrielle took a deep breath and turned toward me, taking both my hands in her own.
I need to do this. I have no idea how to explain it to you. Hades' teeth. I don't even know how to explain it to myself.
It was the first time I ever heard her swear, and I couldn't help but smile. It was that smile that allowed me to open my head and my heart enough to hear what she had to say.
I don't know what it is, and I could be insane, but I can do this. I must do this. I can't explain how or why any better than to say that this feels like my destiny, Xena. It's as though my whole life has been leading up to this one moment. I'm sorry. I'm not explaining this very well at all.
She hung her head in defeat. I don't know how to tell her just then that I knew exactly what she meant. I felt the same thing on the evening I walked into Gabrielle's room, got down on my knees, and asked her to forgive me. I freed her from slavery and asked her to marry me. That moment in time, in that semi-darkened room, I felt my whole life had been leading up to that one space and time, that my destiny was clicking into place.
I wanted to tell Gabrielle all of this, but as was my habit around her, my tongue froze. When I needed my eloquence the most, it deserted me. I pulled the small worm against me and wrapped my arms around her. At last her body relaxed and I felt mine do the same. When she looked up into my eyes, I knew that I didn't have my voice, any of my thoughts. Gabrielle seemed to always know what I was thinking. Anyway.
Athena will protect me, Xena. I have every confidence,
Gabrielle whispered. I hope so, because if Melosa hurts you, I'm going to kick her ass from one end of Corinth to the other, I growled.
Xena!
Gabrielle's admonishment was interrupted by a knock on the outer door. I was rather surprised that it was Yupan standing in the corridor. He was holding a small package in his hands.
Ni hao, Lord Conqueror.
He acknowledged me. I am not so well at this very moment. Thank you for asking, I answered.
I have something for Gabrielle.
Master Yupan, I'm not sure that now is a...
It's all right, Xena.
Gabrielle stood in the doorway between the bedroom and the outer rooms and smiled weakly. I could see her mind was on Melosa. What I still couldn't understand was why she said yes. How did she think she was going to accomplish this?
I have something that belongs to you, my Noir,
Yupan said. He crossed the room and placed a parcel wrapped in cloth on Gabrielle's accepting hands.
Please, open.
The old man indicated the package. Gabrielle looked at me and then moved to a nearby chair. She placed the package in her lap, untied the strings holding it closed, and finally peeled back the cloth. The look on Gabrielle's face could only describe as equal part revelation and astonishment. She fingered an article of clothing from inside the package. It appeared to be silk, deep blue, with very tiny yellow blossoms embroidered on it. She slowly raised her head and stared at Yupan.
Is it true, then?
Was all she asked the old man.
It is true,
Yupan answered.
I didn't think I understand how this can be.
Gabrielle? I asked nervously. She and the old man seemed to be having a conversation that revolved about something they alone were privy to.
It's all right, Xena.
Gabrielle repeated the same reassuring words to me, only this time her smile was genuine. Actually, seeing this of her expression was one of relief.
Tong Zi Shi.
Yupan addressed me by my chin title.
Perhaps if I might have a few moments alone with Gabrielle, so that I might help her prepare.
You're going to do something, right? Some spell or some tricks? I asked desperately.
No tricks, my friend. You are about to get that wish that you once hoped for, Conqueror.
Yupan commented in a crypt fashion.
Gabrielle,
I turned toward her in an attempt once again to talk her out of this foolishness. I just can't...
Xena, you have to trust me, she said quickly. Please, love. We only have a short time, and there are things I need to ask Yupan.
But I finally realized that it was so much easier to trust when you were the one doing the asking. How many times since I fell in love had I asked Gabrielle that very thing? Trust me. Gabrielle came to stand before me as my mind warred with itself. She reached up and placed a gentle kiss on my cheek.
Why didn't you tell me? I asked.
Tell you what, love?
How hard trusting really is, I responded.
Perhaps you just haven't had enough practice yet.
She smiled that seductive smile of hers, and I was reminded again why I fell in love with her in the first place. Because she made it so blessed easy to do, that's why.
I won't let anything serious happen to you, little one, I whispered fiercely.
I know you won't. Now go. I'll see you outside, she responded.
I nodded dumbly, kissed her, and left her alone with Yupan. I prayed to Athena that Gabrielle was right, and that my patron goddess truly thought enough of Gabrielle to protect the young woman.
Childrens and fools,
I muttered to myself as I retreated from the castle. Surely there was a special pace in the afterlife for the both of them. To be continued.
Well, that concludes this episode of XNU, 34th episode of Conqueror Series, Tale 2 by the late L.J. Moss. Hope everybody's enjoying the show. If anyone has any suggestions on a song or a movie or book that they'd like to recommend for a review,
or send suggestions for the show, please send me an email. Also, please send me some emails regarding the contest, whether anyone thinks it's worth the while to go ahead and put that forth. So until the next episode, everyone, please take care, enjoy life, and love. Bye-bye.